Do you want to tell everybody what happened to you?
You guys, Little Romance has gotten into a lot of colleges. And it's
yay!
And Sarah manifested and prayed on her crystals or whatever, and we got
I follow the instruction booklet very closely.
And, like, a financial aid package came through for a school he really wants that is, like, gonna work. And everyone in the Reed's Romance household is
very relieved.
Except maybe the cats who are gonna be sad and miss him, but...
Oh. They will. But then when he comes home, they'll be so happy.
Yes.
So, happy. So yay. That's good news. We hope that everyone else is manifesting good college packages and college acceptance letters if you are out there waiting for college acceptance letters, which sounds terrible.
I know. It is terrible. It's terrible. It's like 10 days of just like waiting. This school, this day, this school, this day.
It feels like they should just all do it on the same day. Rip the Band-Aid off.
I agree.
Make it so.
Well, and now there's these, like, Reddit threads where people essentially, like, it's all really, honestly, very heartbreaking, all of it. I was very invested in a girl who was, like, so afraid to open her Emory decision. It was, like, hours later, and she still hadn't opened it.
I hate it.
I know. You know what we're going to do, Sarah? You're going to take a picture of whatever that crystal kit is, and I'm going to put in show notes so everyone...
I am. P.S. I want to say several people have DM'd me and messaged me about crystalling and I want crystallizing. And I want to say thank you. Somebody sent me a book that I should read about crystals. So I want to say thank you. I have my obsidian in the corner of my office, which is where apparently you're supposed to put your obsidian. To ward off negative thoughts. So
amazing.
Think all the negative thoughts you want about us because I've got obsidian in my office now. And I have this long white crystal thing that
that
I don't remember because in one ear out the other. I don't remember what this is, but this came in the box and somebody told me that if I like kept it on my manuscript, it would be good. So
We're going to put a link.
Using it as a paperweight.
It clearly, look, it worked for us. She manifested, and it worked. So, woo.
Very exciting. Very exciting. So I want to say
welcome to Faded Mates and Crystal Sales with Jen and Sarah.
Yeah, this podcast is about to get pretty woo. Pretty woo-woo. I mean, fine, whatever it takes. It's 2021.
Exactly.
Anyway, it's exciting. We're having a great time. It's a beautiful day. Little Romance got into colleges. My manifestation works. We read a great book this week.
We did read a great book this week.
I'm excited to talk about it.
Me too.
So, Jen, here's what I was thinking. And I texted you this, but I feel like we should talk about this on the podcast. Is like, so we have done deep dives or like really talked a lot about several of the texts that were in several of the books that were in the Best of 2020 box.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not talked about some of the other books that are in the 2020 box. So I was thinking that we should, over the course of 2021, read periodically those books. So, because for example, like there were books that I have not read in that box. I know there are books that you haven't read in that box.
Yeah.
And so I think it'd be really fun to do it that way, even though we have like vaguely touched on
So we'll go through, I think, our two best of lists.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, we could do 2019, too.
Sure, like, figure out which ones we have talked about enough. Like, so, for example, like, Lovers Due was a book I put on the list, but when Tracy Livesey was on to talk about Friends to Lovers, we talked about, like, Lovers Due pretty extensively, so we might not do that one again, but, like, we've only touched on Honey Trap or White Out, so maybe those would be ones that we would...
Yeah.
Do full episodes on. Yeah.
Because over the years, we've sort of talked about, I mean, season one was Cressley, and then season two was like the books that brought us personally to romance. It was really like an exceptionally personal season. And then when we got to season three, I think part of the reason why we sort of just said, oh, we'll just be back on our bullshit is because we didn't really have a guiding principle for season three. And we didn't want to do modern books because first of all, a lot of my friends write romance novels and I didn't want to, want to do my friends' books, like, generally. Like, I mean, I'm friends with Alexis, but, like, I don't I don't want to feel responsible for like deep diving my friends' books.
Right.
That feels weird. And you know, you have a lot of friends in the space too. And so I think this is a good way for us to touch on modern books without it feeling like, oh, that's just Sarah and Jen talking about their friends.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is what we actually try not to do with the best of the year lists. Like,
yeah, fact, right. Poor Kate Claiborne will never be on our... Adriana, we love you. You'll never be on our best of the year list.
Yes. Sophie Jordan, sorry. You're out of the club.
So
sadly, being friends with us does not manifest.
Well, we will talk about your books a lot in other ways.
Alas, we did buy Kate a plant. So that was nice of us.
Sure. I'm not sure. If we'd bought her a Pink Lady jacket, she probably would have stopped being friends with us. So what are you going to do?
Exactly. So anyway, so this week, tell everyone what they've won.
So I decided that we should do You Had Me at Ola, which was a book we both agreed was one of the best books of last year. And I think part of the reason I was really interested in us doing the deep dive is because we had talked about A Matter of Class, which was really, we were really looking at the craft and structure of that book. And so I was kind of like, what are other books that are doing something really interesting? Because I think that's always like a real fertile area, things for us to talk about. And so You Had Me at Ola is doing something really interesting with narration. And so, and something I have also really like loved in the past, which is sort of a story within a story. And so that's one of the reasons I wanted to choose it. I also have really loved all of Alexis's books ever since.
Take the Lead.
You know, the ones about the dancers. And just, I think, her real commitment to a world we are all fascinated by is sort of Hollywood and television and, like, what does it mean to be a working in that world, but not, like, a superstar. And I think in all of her books, she's so committed to, like, the working actor, mm-hmm. right? Like, sort of, you know, not like I'm a big star rolling in money, but, you know, I'm just like, I'm making a living out of the art of acting. And so I think it's also a world we're all really fascinated by, but sometimes we only get, like, maybe, like, you know, the celebrity versus the...
And we've talked before about how much I love a celebrity romance, and I want to talk, maybe, I think we should do the plot first, and then we'll get into it, but I want to talk about how this exists as both a celebrity romance and not a celebrity romance,
like,
because I think it does strip away, it uses some of the conceits of celebrity, of, like, the celebrity trope,
mm-hmm.
without actually delivering a celebrity romance per se. And
right.
I think that's fascinating. I mean, there's a reason why we both thought this was one of the best books of the last year.
Yes.
And it's in the structure of it.
Yes.
It's in the fact that clearly Alexis Daria is at the top of her game.
The top of the game.
Yes.
Even.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Tell everyone about the book. Let's do a plot.
Okay, so the book opens up with Jasmine Lynn. Jasmine is her, that's her stage name, Jasmine Lynn Rodriguez, returning to New York to start a new TV show on a Netflix-type streaming service. And this is, it's a telenovela, but it's like a real big step up because of the platform that it will be on. And she has been a working soap actress for years. So this is like a really great opportunity for her to kind of level up. And it's especially a great time for her to be getting out of LA because she has just been dumped in the most horrifying way possible by her celebrity boyfriend, a pop star. And essentially she found out about it in the tabloids. And so she gets to go to New York. She gets to be kind of reunited with her family. This is where she grew up, her best friends that are her cousins. And, but one of the first things she finds out is that her co-star has been in like an accident. I can't remember what it is. Oh, like something funny. It was like he was cheating on his wife or something and got caught and slipped on some ice. I don't know. And he has been replaced with a very well-known telenovela actor, Ashton.
The scene where they figure out that it's him is really
Yeah.
So Alexis, she is surely one of the best of us when it comes to writing friendships and other relationships in romance.
Yes.
There's always a like broad, beautiful community in an Alexis Daria book. Yes. And that community is going to be hilariously funny and incredibly supportive and just like all around fabulous. And you essentially just want to go live in whatever the community is she's writing.
Agree.
And that is extremely difficult to do as a writer when, and also hold sacred the romance,
yes,
which is what she is able, that is the line she is able to walk, and it is incredibly difficult as a writer. That said, this moment where they're like, they're naming all the thing, all the like, yes, telenovela, like, characters that he's played, and it's like 15 of them, and they all have like, they all sound like romance heroes. Like, it's,
oh,
like,
yeah,
you know, the Golden Lion and the,
the,
you know,
Golden Lion. I love it. We are, by the way, two white ladies. I do not speak a word of Spanish, so I'm gonna not butcher any of these.
No, we're gonna avoid Spanish, the use of Spanish in this.
And I know that that's doing the book a disservice, but we're just gonna say that right at the beginning.
Well, I think we would be doing the book a larger disservice.
That's true. To try and
this in Spanish, we know better. So the, but I do want to talk about language too. That's on my list. But when they're doing this, and then one of them is like, "Oh my God, that's our grandmother. That's your grandmother's like favorite actor," and I was like, "Oh my God, this is amazing," because you have this moment where you're like, you have the kind of cognitive dissonance of my grandmother's favorite actor, but then also like all these younger women just salivating over him. And you have, like, as a reader, you're like, what am I getting into? Like, who is this character? You know, is she writing Silver Fox? Like, what's about to happen?
Yes.
She's not. She's writing a Golden Lion.
Yes. And so, and then here's the other part. And this book is also full of like super memorable scenes. Mm-hmm. And as someone who reads so much romance that sometimes I'm like, wait, was that in that book? There is no question. The things I remember about this book will have only been in this book, right?
Does that make sense? Only be this book. Yes.
Yes. And so she, it's like, you know, she's nervous. She's never met him. So the first time she's going to meet him is at this like table
and
read.
I should say she also has the hots for this guy.
Oh, like, yeah.
It's implied that, like, this nobody doesn't. Everybody who sees this man on the screen is like, holy cow.
Yes, right.
And he was killed off his last role.
Yes.
It sounds like, to me, it sounded as though it was like a point of pride. Like, he was killed off from his last role, and usually he lasts till the end of the show.
Yes. So he's also really worried about his own career. Like, did they kill me off because I'm now not at the top of my game anymore? He's 38. He has dreamed of essentially telenovelas being a stepping stone up to like maybe movies, but you know, his sort of rival got a role that he wasn't even considered for. And so he is really invested in this as being also like a stepping stone, but possibly maybe like a last chance, right?
Right, because this show is not filmed in Miami. It's filmed in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been in L.A. trying to make it in Hollywood. And now, right?
I mean, she's been a working soap opera actress, hasn't also hoped to sort of...
The implications of L.A. soaps and New York soaps and Miami soaps are all like...
Yes, there's a hierarchy.
There's a hierarchy.
And being in a New York one from this streaming service is going to be more mainstream. It's going to be a bigger audience. It's going to have more of a budget. It's a bigger deal, right?
Yes. And he's been in Miami shooting telenovelas.
Right.
And so for him, like, coming in, and this show is bilingual, like, bilingual cast, bilingual creators, bilingual everybody. He is bilingual from telenovelas.
But has an accent that, you know.
Yeah, but Spanish.
Right.
Speaks Spanish from Puerto Rico. And Jasmine, the heroine, doesn't speak very much Spanish.
Right.
Doesn't speak great Spanish.
Yeah, and this is, well, you're getting ahead of yourself. And let me just talk about this one scene, and then we'll talk about the language because it comes in this next scene. So at this table read where they're going to meet each other for the first time, she like walks in as he's preparing a cup of coffee and he essentially like spins around and dumps it all over her.
And she's wearing white and pink. I mean, it's,
you know, she looks the star.
She looks great.
Yes.
She is cleaned up. Perfect.
And even he realizes that, you know, this is terrible. And he's kind of bumbling and like awkward and horrified. So she goes to the restroom and stops like an assist, you know, some assistant and was like, she gives her the $35 in her wallet and says, go find me something to wear. But doesn't really give enough instructions. And the woman comes back from like a bodega. Like she's like, it's like a pair of nylon shorts and a like I Love New York t-shirt. That is a
It's a child's medium like hoodie. And so she puts it on because she doesn't have a choice.
Yes.
And it's like, it's like a crop top.
Yes. And you know what, though? I don't think I have ever loved a heroine more.
In that moment.
Yes.
Just instantly.
Because she is like, this is what I've got. This is, and she like.
Well, she's like, it's either wear this like wet white shirt that's going to show my tits.
Yes.
Or this child's medium.
With my heels.
Hoodie,
with my heels.
Yeah. Lipstick and earrings. And
yes.
Just, you know, fake it till you make it, Jasmine. She's amazing.
She's amazing.
And I also love in this moment, I mean, we're really early in the book still, but in this moment, she texts her friends.
Yeah, her. Well, they're her cousins.
Her right? cousins, yes.
And but so they are her friends, and I love.
She texts. Yeah, they're like her. They're her primas. Her
yeah,
like
yeah.
closest people. And she texts them, and she's like, "This is what I'm wearing." And they're both like hot, so hot. Like, you look amazing.
I really found okay. I know that we're already all over the place. I don't care. I've got to say, I didn't have sisters. I mean, Kelly and I grew up together. I didn't have sisters, but like I wanted cousins like this, right? Yeah. Like this relationship this that she builds with these cousins is amazing.
Yeah. Well, Alexis does this in every book with her communities.
Mm-hmm.
And you do feel, I often sort of pause in the middle of an Alexis Daria book and go like, oh, I sort of long for this.
Yes.
Like, I didn't have cousins like this.
Yes.
I didn't have, you know, like, and then on the reread, I actually did pause and have a moment where I was like, oh, I'm kind of sad that, like, my daughter won't have this. Yeah.
Right.
You know, like, it's such a bummer. And then, but then you're like, well.
Whatever.
I'm going to keep reading. This is a great book.
Yes. Now, here's the thing I guess we need to know really about Ashton before we sort of move into, like, structure stuff, which is Ashton has been a successful telenovela star for 2 decades,
yeah.
But he has a son who is 8 who he has hidden from the world. And part of the reason for this, well, the only reason for this really is that 7 years ago when his son was just a baby, he had a stalker who, like, found out where Ashton lived and broke into the house, like, with a knife.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nothing happened to him or his son. Like, they called 911. This guy ended up in jail. But this deep-rooted fear, and I want to point out, I thought it was really amazing to have a hero who talks about his fear
mm-hmm.
and, like, can recognize how much it has changed the way he lives. Essentially so terrified that his son would be impacted by his fame that he packs up his son and his family, his father, like extended family, buys a house in Puerto Rico for them, kind of in a small town. He has an apartment for himself in San Juan. And like essentially he's just determined to keep these worlds entirely separate. No one will ever know that he's a father so that he can keep his son safe.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot to say.
I know.
I have a lot of things. I have a big list. I have a lot to say. I have something to say about that, but I don't think now is the right time.
It's fine. Well, let's talk about language stuff.
All
or
right.
Is it too early?
Because I do think it actually lives mostly in the beginning.
Yes.
Right?
I agree.
Because in the beginning of this book, it feels like there are a lot of barriers for these two. Like,
yes.
I think Alexis does this really interesting thing where she layers in the barriers at the start of the book. in such a thoughtful way that you almost don't realize like how many barriers there are until you're right. like, oh shit, there's a yeah. lot going on here.
Right.
And so right at the very start, like at the table read, so the book, the show is bilingual. Jasmine is required to speak Spanish. It strikes me it's mostly English.
Right.
And like there are punctuations of Spanish in the
language. Spanish when she's with her parents, English when she's like in the business world, right? So there's a lot of code switching.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Exactly. In the show.
Yes. For Carmen.
It's important for us to state. So there's Jasmine and Ashton, and then there's Carmen and Victor. And right. those are And it's we have to talk about all four.
Yes.
Because Alexis is a genius.
Oh, God, so good.
I know, right. So, okay. So the way that the structure of the book is for the first few chapters, we're in Jasmine and Ashton's point of view. And then there are moments where we slip into the actual text of the show. And the scene, it's not written as a screenplay. It's written as like the experience of the two characters who are, it's a second chance love story, this like
right.
show that they're in. They're ex-partners.
Well, they're divorced.
They're divorced. And so they are,
Carmen owns a PR firm. Victor is a pop star. And he comes to her and basically is like, I've screwed up my career. I need you to help me kind of get back on track. And this is what puts Victor back in Carmen's orbit. And this is the plot of the show, is essentially them coming back together.
Second chance love story.
Right.
So to underscore this, Alexis Daria is writing two romance novels here, right?
Yes, she is.
Which, you know, I mean, fine. I'm not at all like overwhelmed by that idea. So she's writing two. So that's happening, right? On two levels. Jasmine and Victor. So at the table read, Jasmine has to speak Spanish, just to read a line in Spanish.
Yeah.
And when she does, she flubs it. And she flubs, and like not in a huge way.
No.
We're in Ashton's point of view, and he notices it.
Right.
Like, there's something off about the vowels, and like it's slower than he would have expected. And there's a sense, and we've seen her already kind of worry about this aspect of the show. And it had a very, like, this is not entirely fair to poor Jasmine, but had a very Joey Tribbiani feel to me for a little bit where, you know that episode in Friends where Joey's like, you just say yes. You say yes.
You
and
can
then
do it.
Monica right. ends up making him like 16 foreskins because he says he has a foreskin. Do you know that episode? It's very weird. The friends watchers in the crew will know
like,
what I'm talking
about. Talking
about.
Yeah.
Exactly. So she presents them to him on a tray. It's wild. Anyway, but so she said, like, yes, I speak Spanish. And what's interesting about this to me is, so we've talked before on the podcast about how I am the child of an Italian immigrant. And this experience of growing up in a family where people speak a foreign language, right? People are what's called, what I have learned is called a heritage language. So basically,
okay, interesting.
In my case, my father spoke Italian. Mm-hmm. We spoke Italian periodically in the house, or the Italian was spoken periodically in the house, but the dominant language of like my life, my childhood, was English. And so Italian for me is what's called a heritage language. Like it exists for me as like a language in my orbit, but I never spoke it fluently all the time regularly.
Right.
And so there's this thing that is very specific to America, actually. There's a continuum. The way that people now are thinking about bilingualism is on a continuum, and that's particularly because of so many children of immigrants in America. So there's this continuum of bilingualism. It used to be that you either were bilingual or you were not bilingual, and that's just how it was. And the truth is now that cognitive scientists have said So there's this continuum of bilingualism, and it starts with something called receptive bilingualism, which is when you grow up with like a cognitive, an understanding of a language. So you are a fluent listener and understander of a language, but you cannot speak it. And that's like almost at all. Like you basically have no, you have a masterful understanding, but like you've never had to make yourself understood in that language. So there are definitely moments where, you know, I instantly started being interested in this book because Jasmine will hear he'll speak in Spanish and she'll reply in English.
Yes.
And that is a very common, like, my life with my dad was a lot of like, he would say something to me in Italian and I would reply in English.
Yeah.
And then there's something called dominant bilingualism. And dominant bilingualism is a little bit better. It's like basically you understand it, you speak it fine.
Yeah, like, right.
Like, if I'm in Italy or with Italians, I can make myself, like, I'm fine. Like, you would be like, oh, we're in Italy together.
Yeah.
Sarah's talking to people. We're understood. But like fundamentally, there are holes in my like language structure because I never learned it as a complete bilingual experience. And then there's equal bilingualism, which is like two languages simultaneously learned or like, you know, learned to the point of being excellent at both.
Yeah.
And what I think is really fascinating is that this continuum is developed largely because of American families, because of an immigrant culture in a place that's like built with many immigrants, where a new generation, you know what, we've done this first versus second generation question, which is like, I always grew up thinking, like using the term first generation, but now there's some discussion that like, actually I'm second generation, but whatever.
Doesn't matter.
The first sort of baseline generation in America, born in America, doesn't learn the language.
Yeah.
The same way. Like learns the culture, gets the heritage, has the family, has the community, but doesn't actually get the language.
Right.
In the same way. And I think Alexis is doing something remarkable with this book.
Yeah.
That so many people who don't understand that language piece, like and never had to experience that language piece as a person in the world, won't see. Because there's kind of a moment where you're like, or they'll see it and they'll sort of like tilt their head at like, well, why doesn't she speak Spanish? But like, just like he does, why doesn't she speak Spanish? And she doesn't speak Spanish because she's American. Like because she lives here in New York City.
Right.
And so I think when we talk about representation in romance and like moments where you are reading a romance novel and you are seeing yourself reflected not just like as a human, as a singular human, but as like a cultural human, like in your human lived experience, this book is doing something absolutely stunning for that community of
like children of immigrants,
of whom there are many. There are so many of us,
who have
this lived experience.
And it's such a fascinating part of like Jasmine's character. And also like, she talks extensively about how, like, it's not true of her cousins, right? Some are fluent and some know nothing. And, like, it's like that whole
range. It's a continuum.
Yes. And it's really fascinating.
Yeah. And the reason I told Jen before we started recording that I was going to get nerdy about this, because, one, obviously, you can probably tell that I care a lot about this. Like, I think this is a really important thing for us to think about as a nation, like, as a culture. But also, I think what's fascinating about this is this idea that, like, there is a little bit of shame in it for, you know, for there's a sense of, like, wanting to be able to do it better and, like, knowing where your foibles are. And then at the same time, when we're in his POV and he's kind of questioning it, there's a moment of, like, his feelings about it are sort of addressed in an interesting way.
Right.
And then structurally, Alexis is right. It changes the writing of it.
Yes.
Right? Because for so many years, romance, when you write a second language into romance, right? And I've done this. I've written an Italian heroine. And you write a second language in, and then you have to figure out, like, where's the balance of, like, writing in Italian versus writing mm-hmm. English or writing in Spanish versus writing in English. And there's a lot of discussion about like how you do it and like,
right.
You know, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on like, but I think these are important questions. And what Alexis is doing here is because Jasmine can't speak it fluently, the translation is happening in the text.
Yes.
Like in her head.
Right.
Instead of it being like repetitive, which is right. Where a lot of us end up like, I think kind of screwing up writing a foreign language in our romance, in our novels, like where we say the line in Spanish and then we immediately translate it in English.
Like sometimes that happens, but sometimes it's like just pieced together.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of mimicking her own thought process.
Jasmine's thinking it yes. through. Like she's, right. she hears the language, she's getting the input, she understands it in Spanish, but she has to process it into English. And it's such a lived experience.
Yeah.
And yeah. I just want to really like hammer that for everyone. Like the level of skill that is happening here, representation wise, is wild.
I just love this book, man. It's purposeful. Like you can tell that it's purposeful, but it never feels heavy handed.
No. And
right?
I hope that I didn't. Yeah. Like that's not how I felt at all. But like,
it didn't feel preachy. It didn't. And I mean, as a white person, I don't want to say like you preach all you want, I guess. But like, does that make sense? Like this book is like, let me pick up 800 million pounds and do it all. Like I'm
yeah.
dancing like Fred Astaire, right? Like
exactly.
That's the part I just think is really great about this book.
The yeah. moment where they finally have where he's basically like, you don't speak Spanish. Like there's, it's clear you don't speak Spanish.
Yeah, right.
But he's so like cool about, he's like, no one's going to notice. Like I notice because it's my first language. Like I noticed, but.
Right. Your accent's great. And she's.
Because there could easily be, I mean, like, there right. is a lot of shame around this,
around
right?
It.
And so you end up getting corrected all the time by people who speak it better than you.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And you know, Alexis just threads that needle. Like, he's so great
yeah.
about
well,
it.
And so are some of the other actors on the show. Like, she's running lines with them and they're helping her practice and making
yeah,
sure,
yeah.
right? And I think, you know, what's funny because the last time I've seen like this in particular in like a mainstream thing is, and it's like not recent, is in the movie Selena, which is with Jennifer Lopez. Like
yes.
Selena does not speak Spanish. And there's this part where they go to Mexico and, you know, her dad is like, oh my God, your Spanish is terrible. And she's like,
yep.
don't worry, I'm going to charm them. And it was, you know, and it's like kind of seeing like that, push-pull between, like, I can look the part, but as soon as I open my mouth, someone's going to know. And I thought, like, all of this stuff with around, oh, God, this book is so great, right? It really is.
Yeah.
For that.
So, yeah. I mean, I just think, like, it's so effortless, and it's so, you know, it's very real. And then on top of it, I just think the whole book does such a remarkable, when we talk about, there's so much conversation in romance about representation
mm-hmm.
and about like, and for a lot of white authors, it feels like a lot of white authors are saying like, well, it's just so hard. It's just so
yeah.
hard to do representation right. And I think Alexis, this book just defies all of that. It's
right.
so, representative of New York City. There's so much like, you know, there are trans characters and non-binary characters and like there are like subtle nods toward pronouns, like,
yeah.
you know,
right.
how people exist in the world in 2021. And it's just also deft. And it should be deft for all of us, but I think it's so deft for Alexis that like the book is like a text.
You know what else I think? And this is like, I just think Alexis like really loves her characters.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I have no idea how I know that. Right. Like if you were like, show me how that, what do you mean?
Because it feels like that. Because
right?
it doesn't always feel this way.
Right. Exactly. And that's the part I think that really comes through is, you know, these are characters who are like have made mistakes, are, you know, Jasmine is not a perfect woman. She's not this like, you know, she's like, I love her moxie, but like, you know, she struggles with, you know, and her cousins know, like, right, you're always falling in love and you're always like rushing into these things and you need attention. And she's like aware of those things, but still like kind of falls into that trap of like, and I thought they're like the way that is portrayed just like for her and Ashton both, right? As like real characters who are like kind of struggling with their inner demons and like wanting to be better and not always like quite making it happen. Mm-hmm. That's the part I think like this is like, well, this, the character work here is, I think, really unparalleled.
For all characters. I mean, there's just, you know, there's not a secondary or a tertiary character in this book who isn't given like the respect that they deserve.
Right.
And that's what gives the whole book authenticity, right? It's what makes the whole book feel like it's real.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things I was like noodling and it took me a while on the reread to figure out what I was really thinking. And I got around to, and I wrote it down, like, this book is a textbook for human relationships.
Yes.
Like, and I want to talk about the intimacy coordinator.
Yes.
And then I'll say more about what I mean by it's a textbook.
I guess I just feel like, you know, I don't know if people would call this like a rom-com. Whatever. It is funny, right? Sure.
It's funny.
Yeah.
You know, you and I always struggle with, like, what makes a rom-com?
Sure, but I guess
it's funny.
One of the things that I think is very common in movie rom-coms or in portrayals of rom-com is on TV is there's always, like, an aspect of humiliation.
Mm.
And I think, one of the reasons I'm always, like, I don't know if I want – I don't want to read –
that child's medium crop top.
Yes, but –
But then she looks great in it, so.
Right. But it's also like, but she's not humiliated so that we find her less.
Mm-hmm.
People have shitty things happen to them, and then she just is like, I'm going to handle this. Right? Does that make mm-hmm. sense? And I think that's what I mean when I say that, like, Alexis, like, loves and respects her characters is, like, nobody felt like, even when they were, like, making mistakes or doing whatever, right? Like, no one felt like a target in this book. Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes in rom-coms or books that are called rom-coms, there's like some meanness, and there's no meanness here. And maybe that's what it is.
No, but that's because the book is a textbook for human relationships.
Yeah.
I mean, and truly, I'm hard pressed to think of another romance novel that does this so well.
Yeah.
Period. And which is wild because when we think about romance,
right,
it is the genre of human relationships,
right?
Right.
Right.
So can we talk about the intimacy coordinator now?
Yes.
Okay. So as part of this relationship that they, as part of the story of the book and of, as part of the show, there is an intimacy coordinator attached to the show. This is a job that exists in the world, which is amazing, where basically, like, this is a crew member of the show whose job it is to both coordinate the sex scenes and the, like,
right, the kissing.
Know, the kissing.
Like, and literally physically blocking them, like, move this way. And, right? Yeah.
But also to, in, I imagine, the best possible scenario, work with both characters so that everything feels safe and consensual. I don't imagine this job existed
right,
a while ago.
Right.
Like, I think this is probably,
I don't think anybody at Game of Thrones got
job,
this.
Right?
Yeah, right.
And so there is a moment. So this woman is amazing.
Yeah.
Jen, tell everybody what you texted me earlier.
Oh, I was absolutely like, if I was the type of person to write fan fiction, these three would definitely have a smoking hot night together. And then they would just be like,
so that's our request
fun
to Alexis.
Yeah.
You like that out.
You can just send it to me, Alexis. Oh, yeah. Ashton and Jasmine and Vera definitely get it on one night.
Yeah.
And it is hot. I'm sorry. I have no regrets. That's how I felt. Because she's in it with them. It really is like the intimacy of that scene with the three of them is like, it's really sexy.
Yes. But it's also doing so much work writing-wise, this scene. Oh, yeah. It's bananas. Because the first scene with the intimacy coordinator, and I love it because Ashton's like, now what is this about?
Yeah.
Because he's never engaged with one of these people before. And so there they are. And Vera says, why do you think it's important to the story
that they kiss right
now? For the two of you to be, for like the characters to be kissing right now. And he's like, because it's in the script.
Yeah. Jennifer Prokop was like, it's a romance and everyone should kiss more. That's why.
But here's the thing. Alexis is writing, like, there you go. Now you know what it's like to be a writer, like to write romance novels. In that moment, there's a pause for everyone. And for me, I was like, oh shit, she's doing the writing work. Like, she's like showing the dance.
Yeah.
She's teaching you the dance as she's dancing it. And it is wild because I've never seen a romance novelist do this before.
Okay, so now let's talk for a minute about, like, this framing device, right? So most of the chapters are either Ashton's point of view or Jasmine's point of view, but then we get the chapters that are in, like, that are Carmen and Victor.
What's it called? Carmen in Charge? Is that what it's
Carmen in Charge, yeah. And the thing that's fascinating about these chapters is they're written in text, so that it's not just a script, right? They're written and
they're a romance novel.
It's a romance novel, but then there are times where, like, one of them will essentially, like, break the fourth wall and be like, and I was, like, tracking, like, in the first one, it doesn't happen at all. Chapter one is episode one, and chapter
two, the second one,
is when it happens, right?
Because they're
she leans
very
on him.
Close moment.
And you think it's Carmen and Victor, and then all of a sudden you get Jasmine being like, focus, Jasmine, and you're like, oh, right? And the way in which an actor inhabits a character but brings themselves into it.
But also I feel like I'm repeating myself, but it's like, it's doing the work of the writing.
Yes.
Like, the scenes are unpacking the emotional baggage of the characters. I mean, of course they are, right? Like, obviously that's what they are there for.
Right.
But they're actually doing the writing work. What's wild about it is that, Carmen and Victor, the characters, are evolving the story of Jasmine and Ashton.
Yes.
Without, in the reader's mind, the Jasmine and Ashton story is being pushed forward by a second love story.
Yes.
That they don't know, like, it's hard to, like, It's
hard to explain,
wild web of writing where that requires, in order for Jasmine and Ashton's story to work, Carmen and Victor must exist.
Yes, right.
And obviously, that sounds like, well, obviously, the book is set on the set of a television show. The characters have to exist. No, I'm not talking about the job has to exist. I'm talking about these two characters have to exist in the world of the book. It is so fucking bizarre and so fucking great.
Yeah.
And I, as a writer, cannot figure out how she does it so perfectly. It makes me not a small amount angry.
This is a book that, okay, like, I'm tackling, like, okay, I have one romance story, and then I have another one, and romance story number two is, like, essentially the springboard for the main romance to continue, and while I'm doing all of that, I'm also going to show you, the reader, that the act of taking in art changes you, literally. It changes you.
Yes.
You are changed.
What is the book where we talked about that? The Penn and Teller cup and ball trick.
Yes, I don't remember. But
we talked about it. Yeah. We'll link to it again. Because this is it, right?
Yes.
So Penn and Teller do a cup and ball trick. Apologies to everybody who listened to that episode already, but there are new listeners, so I'm going to repeat myself. They do a cup and ball trick, which is a very old-fashioned, everybody has seen this cup and ball trick. Like, if you've seen a magician, you've seen this. They do it using clear cups, and they tell you how they're doing it as they're doing it. So you are seeing the trick
Yes.
Like, there is no magic here. And it still feels like magic.
Right.
And, like, that is what is happening here. Alexis has shown you the full bag of romance novel tricks.
Yes.
And you still feel like you have been shown experience a magic trick.
Magic, yes. Yeah, I agree. And I think that that, like, literally as on the reread, I was like, I feel like I could write a paper. I guess we'll have a podcast where I break down the parts where, like, they break down into the other characters, right? Like, why is it, like, written this way? What is the pieces of information that the actor is adding versus the script is adding, right? Like, how does, like, in what magic, it's like alchemy. I've used that word before, right? So you put these two people together and you give them this script and this love story, and somehow, like, this, like, magic happens, and it's going to carry these characters forward, and then that's carrying this couple, like, right, this other. It's amazing. Uh-huh. I don't even know if we're doing it justice. I guess
we're not.
I would just say,
we're not.
Sorry.
Just read the book.
Just read the book.
Jen, you know what the book was that where we talked about that?
What?
I bet you could guess.
I don't know. What book was it?
It was Bet Me.
Of course it was.
Of course it was, right? Another writer who is doing massive amounts of craft work.
I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
This book is so, Alexis's book is so good. It's like, it's on a par with Bet Me.
And I think part of the thing is, and I will say the first time I read this book, I was like, what are these chapters doing here? Right? Because in the beginning,
you don't know. In the beginning, they seem like filler.
Right.
Yeah, but not for long. I mean, maybe to you. Like maybe.
The first time. Maybe, chapter one. And then you're like, oh, I see what they're doing.
When she breaks the fourth wall, right?
Yes.
When it becomes Jasmine and not Carmen.
Right.
That first moment, you're like, oh, shit, she's doing a thing here. I mean, it's great. And so, but what is interesting is, so going back to Vera, while all this is happening, the intimacy coordinator is working with them to get them to a place where they feel comfortable, like consensual, when everything feels safe and consensual with them touching, kissing, making out, you know, whatever. And she asks these kind of pointed questions about, like, why is this happening? Why, you know, why did the kisses have to happen here? What's the importance of it? It's all about underscoring communication. And that word comes back again and again.
Yes.
This, like, communication between them is colleagues, as characters,
as lovers.
Right. And so what ends up happening is there are several moments where Alexis uses communication in a way, and this is what I mean when I say it's a handbook for human relationships, because there's, of course, the sex piece, and I want to put a pin in it because I think the sex in this book is superior.
So good. Yes.
But I also want to talk about the climax, or I don't know if we'd call it. I guess it's the climax of the book.
Are you just trying to make me giggle again?
Honestly, you all have filthy minds. The number of tweets that are like, Sarah said, you said Spike is a wall that Buffy's banging against.
Come on. We can't even help ourselves. It's fine.
It's true. And Spike is a wall that Buffy's banging against. And it's great. Anyway, but okay, it's the climax of the book.
Yes.
Everything falls apart, right? Like, it's revealed that they're having an affair, it's not an affair, that they're together, that he has a secret baby.
A secret baby.
In Puerto Rico. There's all this, like, he had a stalker. Like, it all comes out in the tabloids. And that's how Jasmine discovers many of Ashton's, like, secrets, which must really suck. So dating a celebrity sounds terrible, but in the moment, she's furious, right? She sees it. She's angry. She goes to him and she says, like, I don't like hearing your secrets from the tabloids.
Right.
And she says, communication. So you go.
You go.
It's so healthy.
Yes. I know.
And like, don't feel like I am healthy enough in my own relationship to do this conversation.
No, me neither. I was like, why are you such a baddie? Right? Communication, your turn. You have to talk to me now.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And we see him start to say, well, you, and then he stops and thinks, I need to say I, but he can't stick to it. He is a fucking mess in this scene.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good, and it's so romantic, because this is the moment, right, where he breaks, and he has to man up.
Yeah.
Like, he has to acknowledge his flaws, and he has to be a better person for her. In other romances, this is like, he has to like punch a bunch of people in the face and then like burn down his casino. And in this book, he just has to talk.
Well, and here's the part that I would also like to say. Anytime someone says, well, if they just talked, they could figure it out. This is a scene that shows you how fucking perilous it is to talk to the people you love.
Yes.
Because they are talking to each other, but they fuck it up, right? Yes. Because it's like you're full of anger and anxiety and fear and guilt and everything and, right, like resentment. And so your words come out wrong.
Suffer.
Oh, God. And that's the thing. I'm like, you know, as it turns out, it's in fact really hard to talk about the shit. You can't.
I mean, it's a nonsense. It's a nonsense critique of. I mean, well, here's the thing. It's not a nonsense critique of a romance novel. It's just not the critique of what people think it's the critique of.
Exactly.
Which is a different thing. We'll talk about that in another episode.
But this scene is so perfect for showing here are two people who are in the same room and speaking their truth.
Care
and somehow,
deeply for each other.
And like, know that. And she says that to him. I mean, there's this amazing, her self-awareness is off the charts in a way that's really believable, where she says something essentially like, she'd been with a lot of men and she knew he was into her, right? But that she deserved better.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not exactly what she says, but it's great.
Is a handbook.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, don't read any of those like bullshit self-help books.
Read
book. You Have Me at Hola. Like, this is a relationship handbook. Give it to your stupid man. If you have a stupid man out there, this is the gift for Father's Day's coming up.
Read this book. So, I mean, I think this, I guess I would just say, like, yes, I feel like this, and I think for a book that uses, like, language, like, their miscommunication is not language-based, right? It's, and that's the thing. It's like, that's why that all that stuff about language at the beginning is so brilliant. Because at the end,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, right? What matters is, like, all the fear and other things that get in the way.
Yeah.
And she is so fearless, right? And there's a part where she's like, you can't have it both ways.
Well, and here's the thing. She can speak multiple languages, right? Yeah. Like, she can speak the language of, like, emotion.
Yes.
Right. And he can't do it.
Right. Right.
Like, he has receptive bilingualism with the emotion piece.
Yes. Exactly.
He's like, I understand the input, but I do not know how to put it out there into the world.
Yes.
I mean, it's so smart. It's such a smart, thoughtful, nuanced, glorious book.
Yeah. So, and I do want to talk about sex.
Oh, yeah.
And I also want to talk about, and maybe we'll just do this first. One of the other things I really appreciate in this book is Jasmine drinks. We see Jasmine drinking as a coping strategy when she is upset. And as a reader, I was sort of upset by it. I remember being like, I don't like how she's drinking, right? There's a part where she's like really with her family and they are terrible. And she's like, just keep bringing me mimosas. And it never felt like she's like a raging alcoholic or anything, but just like this wasn't healthy for her. And I love that Alexis sort of like deals with that by the end of the book.
Yeah.
That was important to me as a reader.
Yeah.
Not that I need people to be perfect, but when you put like stuff on page that you know is unhealthy, especially in a book that cares this deeply about its characters, for me, that reassurance was just really important as a reader.
Yes.
And I just want to shout that out. Like, that meant something to me.
I mean, but Alexis ties up many of the...
Yeah.
I mean, this is also an epilogue that does a lot of work.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Which is... And it does a lot of work in terms of saying, like, you know, it checks in. Like,
yeah,
everybody's in therapy.
Yes.
Like, everybody's feeling okay now. We love each other. We're going to the Golden Globes. Like, there's a lot of, like, everything feels, like, really solid at the end. Like, everything that you worried about during this whole book. And here's the thing. I think that right now there is this sort of world of contemporary romance that is doing a lot. We've talked before about like realistic romance, like this. Mm-hmm. This book doesn't feel like a fantasy.
Oh no, not at all.
Why? Right. Oh well, because I want to talk about celebrity romance. Because
yes.
Maybe can we do that now and then talk?
And then we'll, yes, perfect.
Okay, because celebrity romance is part of the promise of the premise of the celebrity romance is that fantasy.
The fantasy.
That, like, one of you is normal and one of you is Tom Hardy.
Right.
And
the dresses, the glow up, the gowns,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and, like, all that. It's going to be what it's going to be, like, wild falling for Tom Hardy. And at the end, like, you're the only one for him, right? I mean, I've never had this particular fantasy. I've just, you know.
Clearly never.
I mean, I couldn't do 2 hours on this fantasy. But the... anyway, the point is, though, there's a lot of the celebrity romance is at its core, it's Cinderella, right? Like, it's
right.
Absolutely a fantasy. This book is very real.
Yeah.
But it's not real in a kind of like what I think is happening in some corners of contemporary right now, where it's like a little depressing. It's
yeah, no, no, right, right.
This is like beautiful and honest and a textbook for being a good human in a relationship, yeah. But also like kind of magnificent. Like everybody's hot and
sure. You know, can I add one more thing though that I think this celebrity romance does?
Yes.
And maybe Alexis's celebrity romances do, which is
we should add Alexis is coming on to talk about celebrity romances for an interstitial. So we're not gonna do I don't want to dig too far into it.
But I do want to say this one thing, and I was thinking a lot about this in the terms of, like, what it meant to Jasmine and Ashton and the crew and all the other actors to make Carmen in charge, which was, there's a part where she talks about, like, they put a map on the wall and people could say where they were from, because the Latinx experience was so, like, vast here. People were Colombian mm-hmm. and Venezuelan and, right, like, every, you know, Puerto Rican, and so every, it's like this whole, like, group of people. And one of the things that I found myself thinking about a lot was a story I've mentioned before. My sister-in-law writes for TV, and she wrote for seasons 3 or 4 of Atlanta, which haven't been filmed yet. And I remember, like, sometimes I ask her, like, well, what was this show like? Like, what was it like, this writer's room? And one of the things, and I will never forget this, I asked her, like, what was the writer's room like for Atlanta? And she paused. And that's like a pretty broad question, right? You can ask. I'm always like, who knows what I mean even?
Yeah.
But the way she answered it is she said, well, it's the first time I've ever been in an all-Black writer's room. And I knew what she meant, right? Was that, like, I was seen there, and then we were going to make something where people would be seen when they saw it.
Yeah.
And I think that the thing about, like, celebrity romance is, like, all the Cinderella stuff we talked about, but also, like, your goal would be to, like, make art for people who can see themselves in it and, like, see themselves as they're making it.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that was, like, the part of this celebrity romance that I, like, found really poignant, right? Like, that, yeah. Like, going, and then, like, they're, like,
but
three
Alexis
of them.
Alexis has always been able to do
yes.
this. Like, in all yeah. of her books, she tackles artists.
Yes.
Like, and she reminds you that a dancer is an artist, an actor
yes.
is an artist. Like, and
the
as
craft
people
of acting,
in the
yes.
world who yes. stare at Twitter all day.
Yes.
And who, like, literally as we are recording this, Twitter is blowing up about, like, who is hot and bald in real life, right? And I am going to say, I started looking at one of those threads. I told Jen this already. I started looking at one of those threads today, and number 4 on the list was my neighbor. And I was like, oh, no. And I just noped right out of it. And I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah, right.
And so, but the point is, like, we are so starry-eyed over dancer, actor,
yes.
celebrity, television, whatever, that we forget these are real people.
Yes.
Who are real people.
And there's several times in the book where, like, Jasmine and Ashton both, like, realize, like, oh, I'm growing in my craft right now.
Oh, like, it's so glorious. I mean, you can just tell that
yes.
Alexis loves craft, too.
Yes.
That she's just, like,
yeah.
She, like, you know, rolls around in, like, how to do it.
Yeah. And I just thought, like, that's the other part about, like, being a celebrity here is, like, I'm going to make something that's going to mean something to mm-hmm. the people who watch it. Like, my grandmother loves, like, yeah. I'm, and I just thought
well,
that part was really.
Moment, yeah. She's on the red carpet and somebody says, I'm a fan.
Yeah.
And she's like, and she has a moment in her head where she's like, I have a fan.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
That's, there's such an authentic, it goes back to what you were saying. She loves her characters. Like, yeah. Everything is authentic. There's no, like.
And it's the flip side of the tabloid thing, which is so invasive and terrible, is the people who you've, like, I've changed their lives. I've given them something that's, like, changed them. They saw this thing I was in, and they're different now.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you feel that as a writer, right? Like, no, I'm serious. Don't make that face. You know?
I think I do. Here's the thing. That moment in the book is very, that felt very real to me. It felt like a thing that Alexis pulled from her own life,
yeah.
Right? Because there is that moment where you meet somebody and they're like, I'm a huge fan. I love your books. Oh my God. I made this thing or I started writing because I read your books.
Yeah.
And it's wild.
I bet.
I mean, I don't know how to really articulate the weirdness of hearing that because like, I'm just a normal person.
Right.
Like, I'm just a person who doesn't shower when she's on deadline, you know?
Nobody needs to know that. Yeah.
I think that the celebrity piece of this, and one of the reasons why I think it'll be so interesting to have Alexis on to talk about celebrity romance is because she doesn't do this fantasy piece. Like,
right.
Because
it's the workmanship.
Well, it's respect for her characters. I mean, you really nailed it. We didn't have to do an hour of this. We could have just been like, Alexis Daria respects her characters.
But I do want to talk about sex.
Okay, because it's hot.
Yes.
Okay, can we talk about that first scene where he's like, I don't think we should have penetrative sex, but I'm going to make you feel great.
She's like, can you go get the lube?
Perfect.
And
we talked about that. Normalized lube.
And in, like, the scene where they have sex later, she's, like, unwrapping the condom, and there's this great line, and I was like, this is romance, where he goes to the bedroom to get the lube because he knows she likes it.
Yep.
And I was perfect. Like,
well, there's also in that first thing where she's, like, lube in the bedside drawer, and he opens it, and he thinks, like, there's, like, a pile of, like, battery-operated excitement in there.
And he's like, ooh.
Ooh, that's for later.
Yeah. It's terrific.
They are so hot together.
Oh, God.
And then they cannot. Here's what I love in a romance. I'm trash for this, and I've never written it, and I got to put it on my list. I am trash for they cannot keep their hands off each other.
Same.
Like,
listen.
Because here's the thing. They're both going through it, right? Like, they have sex, and then they have sex immediately again, and then they have sex immediately again, and then, like, it starts to get weird, and they're not sure. Like, he's going to Puerto Rico, and, like, she's like, I can't do this. This is not how this goes. And then, like, the tabloids are like, are they having sex all the time? And they are, but they don't want to admit it. And then you're like, oh, my God, and she thinks, I can't do this. We can't have sex all the time. And then immediately he shows up, and she's like,
let's do it. Oh, my God. I am trash for that, too. Absolutely.
It's so good.
Yes.
I can't keep my hands off you is
amazing.
100% A+.
Yes. It's super hot, right? And, yeah, it's amazing.
And it's also
hot.
Just like, I guess we're just, I was gonna now.
Listen, you're beautiful and I'm beautiful and we're beautiful together. Like, it is great.
It's hot. This is a hot book.
He can, like, carry her around and put her on top of things.
I know. It's great.
Yeah.
And he's, like, a grown man.
Yes.
I like that, too.
Yeah, me too.
Initially with the, like, and like I said, at the very beginning when it's, you know, grandma's favorite.
Yeah, actor, right. You're like, is he going to be, like,
is it Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yes. No, exactly.
No, it's not. But, like, he's a grown man.
Yeah.
With a life and a purpose and, you know, faults and...
Yeah.
But he can also, you know, throw a girl around if he wants to.
It is so hot. I'm not even really, like, saying anything great about it, except, yeah, I am trash for they cannot keep their hands off each other.
I really am, and you don't see it very much.
Yeah. Well, I think because one of the things I actually really like about it is, I mean, she's 30 and he's 38 and they can't keep their hands off each other. It's not like, I feel that's like great. Sometimes people are afraid to use that. Maybe they think it's going to veer too young, right? Like, we're not in charge. You know, I don't know, like, right? Does that make sense? Maybe. Like, you're young and dumb or whatever. But I thought this was hot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
yeah.
A+. We don't have a ton to say.
I will say this. I did also really like the way things wrap up with Ashton's family. I don't really want to get into it. It's like a spoiler, but like he has to be made whole again, and his fear of like essentially his fear of his son being compromised by the press has mean that he cannot be as close to his son as he wants to be. Mm-hmm. And the book has to resolve that. And it does. And I was happy with the way that it gets resolved.
Yeah. She ties up everything.
Yeah, right.
This is an extremely tightly written book.
Yes.
And the other thing, actually, I would say this about the sex scenes. The sex scenes are incredibly sexy, like banana sexy. And also there's the language of them is, it's very, yes. she really holds them tight. And I think that's why it works too, that they can't keep their hands off each other, because none of the sex scenes are incredibly long. I say this is like the queen of the 20-page sex scene.
There's but nothing like, wrong with that, Sarah.
Well, I know, but like you can't yes, do, sure. they you can't do their hands off times, each right. other and then have like 120 pages of sex sure. scenes. I mean, you can, but I wouldn't, my book's just 700 pages long.
Yeah.
So it's just so tightly written. It shows such masterful work in terms of craft. And I would say that if you are out there and you are thinking like, oh, I want to write a contemporary, but like, I don't really know who's doing it. Like, best, who should yeah. I be following?
Right. Alexis.
For sure. You should be following Alexis. Like, she is great. You should read every one of her books. But this one is, I mean, I've loved all of her books.
Yeah.
But this one is just, it's just, she's just on the, on, she's, cre- like,
yeah.
she's just moving up. It's amazing. Every book is best or last.
I would also recommend this book to anyone who is really interested in how you come back from a really ugly fight. Right? I think that, I'm a fan yes. of the grovel. He's with his son, and there's an opportunity for, like, a dad can get on stage and apologize publicly, right? And it's kind of like, ooh, are you going to go get on stage and tell everybody that you fucked up? Well, the kid doesn't say this. He's 8. And Ashton says, I don't think I have to do that. I think I just have to tell her. And it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, like, again, this, like, really deep understanding of... like a, like my, to fix my personal fuck up, I do not need to do a big public thing, right?
Right.
And it really fits like the magnitude of what he does in that moment.
Yeah.
Right.
Does I want to talk about that, and I wonder if we should talk about it now, or if we should talk about it. I think we should talk about it with Alexis when she's on, because I do.
We can save a few things. Yeah.
I do think this is a celebrity romance thing.
Yes.
That doesn't work. When you're both working actors who
yeah.
don't approve, who don't, like...
aren't glory hounds.
Yeah, when you're right? both working actors who don't invest in the fantasy. Or who can't, I mean, the book doesn't invest in the fantasy, period.
Right.
Yeah, right. Because in a fantasy celebrity romance...
it would end differently.
That happens on stage.
And I think, well, let's save then. The other person I really want to talk about is Kitty Sanchez, which is like the tabloid yeah. reporter. The tabloid but I, let's reporter. Let's save that too, because I think that would be a really interesting thing to unpack with Alexis, because it's a fascinating,
yeah,
fascinating the way even the tabloids are working in this one. But I think we can save that too.
Yeah, I think we should
keep a couple things in reserve.
Here we go. See, you'll be back, everyone.
Oh God, this book's so good.
If it hasn't been clear to you yet, we loved this book. We loved it a whole lot last year, and we continue to love it this year. I was really grateful for a chance to read it again, too.
Yes,
I read it.
Me too.
It feels like I read it a million years ago.
Yeah. And I would say the second book with one of the cousins, I don't know which one.
Have you read it?
I don't know if it's out yet.
It's not out yet, is it?
There are.
I mean, it's not out for sure, but.
Yeah. No, but arcs aren't even out. Galleys aren't even out. So, but I was like, everybody's going to like, want to.
What? How do you have it? Why don't I have it?
I
don't have it,
but I I want it. But I think this is another thing where, like, I fell in love with those cousins again. And I was really excited to have read this because I'm like, oh, good. When I get to the next book, I'll be ready to go.
But again, yeah. that's Alexis's whole thing. If you love a book that has deep, abiding friendship.
Yes.
that's what this is. I mean, yes, they're cousins, but.
Oh, yeah. No, they're best friends. It's amazing. These are best friends. They know each other so well. Yeah.
Also, I would totally. She also somehow made it impossible, or she somehow made it possible for me to think that kissing Ashton 17 times in a row would be exhausting.
Would be bad.
I know.
He was in his own head.
I know. Oh, that was so smart too. Mm-hmm. The Carmen in charge piece right during that kiss was so smart.
Yeah, it's all really good.
Ah, she's so good. All right. So that is that. What are we reading in 2 weeks, Jen? She's mouthing. I don't know to me.
Well, I will say this. Given the, we should go back and read some of the ones we haven't spent as much time on. I would suggest we either read.
But I don't think we need to do that, like, all at once.
Okay, so we don't know what's coming up next then, everybody. You just have to wait. We'll tell you next week.
Yeah. Next week, interstitial.
Yes.
And several of you have been DMing us about witches. We have a plan for witches. Just sit tight. It's happening. It's just not happening yet. I mean, you can't do witches in March.
No. Yeah, you gotta save it. Sure.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm sticking to that.
Springtime, pretty ringtime. Not, you know, boil, toil, and trouble. I'm no. Bubble, double, but toil, and trouble.
We hear you. We know you want witches. It's on our list. This is Fated Mates, everyone. We are produced by Eric Mortensen. You can find us at fatedmates.net, where our website exists. And you can find old episodes. Don't forget that we have an entire first season of episodes about Cressley Cole, who, you know, potentially has a new book coming at some point, and you might want to catch up. We'll definitely do an episode for that. You can also find links to get buttons and stickers from Best Friend Kelly. You can find gear, Fated Mates gear, from Jordan Dene on that website. You can listen to our Spotify playlist, which has all the music that Eric includes in our podcast daily. And you can watch a YouTube channel full of all the videos of all that music in case. The other day, my daughter, who is 7 years old, walked through the kitchen playing the Red Hot Chili Peppers' Blood Sugar Sex Magic very loud because she was listening to the Fated Mates playlist. So it's family friendly.
I just hope the pegging one isn't on there. That'd be
it for sure is.
She's not going to know what it's about.
She's not. But
she's like, is this about the Cracker Barrel game?
Yes. Exactly. But I was a little concerned by Step Into My Heaven, where I keep it on the soul side. Please Me, Be My Soul Bride. It felt like it was maybe too much for 7-year-old, but what are you going to do?
When I was 7, my favorite song was probably Sugar Walls by Sheena Easton, which is real filthy. So there you go.
Prince Protege, speaking of somebody incredibly filthy.
All those Prince songs
as children.
All of us love Prince, and it is all filth.
And our parents never once said, don't listen to Darling Nikki.
They sure. Wait, can I tell you? I don't know if I've ever told this story on the podcast. When Little Romance was about 7 or 8, we were listening to Little Red Corvette. Which is a song about masturbation already.
Yeah, but really it's about his, you know, his little cars.
Sure. Well, Little Romance said, I wonder who won. Mr. Reed's Romance pretty much fell the fuck out. Like, I still do not think I've recovered.
Have you ever told Little Romance this story?
Well, one day he'll know. Maybe I'll go tell him right now. I'll report back to you. I wonder who won. We were both like,
I wonder who won. Oh, kitten. And now he's going to college.
He is.
Look at it. Look at how time flies.
What a world.
All right, my friends, have a great week. Read a great book. Tell us if you read You Have Me at Ola, and tell us what you love the most about it. Alexis, if you're listening, we hope we did you justice.